episode of the Seize the Initiative podcast, a Horus Heresy Warhammer 30K podcast. My name is Blaine Miller. I'm one of your associates here on the show. And this is...
Sean Freed. I'm the other host and Blaine's longtime friend.
We've known each other for a little bit, you know? It's kind of our thing. So, this... We wanted to start off by saying just kind of who we are, what got us into the game in the first place. Me and Sean have known each other since high school. My brother bought these models, brought them home. I looked over the model line, immediately was like, these are some cool looking models. I've got to see what's going on here. Bought them up. And before I knew it, I was painting models with no one else really to play with. And around that time, I met Sean here, and...
Yeah, I'd been playing Mech Warrior with Dan back then, and you kind of showed me this game and the cool customization that you could do when painting it, and that's why I was drawn to 40K, why I thought it was so cool.
Sure,
that was my initial.
Mech Warrior came in more...
Pre-painted.
You didn't model them, right?
No, not at all. They were pre-painted and pre-modeled. They were more like action figures, like straight-up action figures. And I even painted a few of them back then.
Gotcha.
We moved into 40K and played that pretty aggressively. It was, you know, a lot of fun. We dragged a few other people into it. And, I mean, that was the better part, not almost a decade ago. That's shocking to think about.
Shocking to think about. We are getting there. But...
We've always emphasized this, like, narrative style of play, though. Like, we've had our characters we built from the beginnings with our early rumblings with it and kind of dragged those guys around through these.
We both have history in role-playing games and the narrative thing. It was a cool avenue to be able to express that. And your guys are just awesome and cool, and they're fighting battles and stuff. And, yeah, we've always stressed the narrative aspect of it, that infusing some kind of personal investment into it and really growing a campaign can be a really rewarding feeling by the time it's over, and can, even when you lose, it still is kind of something you can look back on and go, that was a really cool thing that we constructed.
Yeah, I mean, you bend it into a story immediately afterwards, and even though your guy may have fallen, he's like, oh man, he thinks back to this memory when this happened, and he's, you know, like, gonna do determination to get through this. And
sure, and I found it to be far better than the competitive environment. The tournament scene, I maybe went to a couple tournaments, tried my hand in it, was not where I wanted to be, I don't think.
Same here. I think the game structure isn't necessarily meant for that. You know, Dan went that War Machine Hordes route, and, you know, he's all in on that, and I played that.
Yeah, go play Privateer Press.
And it's a lot of fun. It's enjoyable. I still, when I get a chance, like to play those games too, but this is that other narrative aspect. It's way more like storytelling and mm-hmm. less tense.
The setting is so unique.
Yeah.
I love it.
And that's what brought us to 30K and Horus Heresy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe... We were trying to determine how we got into it, and it was about a year ago. I think I just looked at some of the minis. I think I was online just looking at pictures of Primarchs or just goofing off, and then saw a picture of a Primarch model and was like, oh, crap, I forgot that they were doing this, you know, in Forge World, and there were several models since the last time we had looked.
Yeah, I had no idea what was going on.
That's what drew our attention to it, and I had just finished my Tau for the most part. You know, cleaned up exactly where I wanted them to be, and I was looking into starting that third army. And I think I looked at Skitarii, and because I brought that up a little bit.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, that was obviously like closer to 6 months, 6 or 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about, I was starting up a Ravenwing thing, and then now all of a sudden, Space Marines are, it's Horus Heresy time. It's, Space Marines are all the rage now, and...
Yeah, I think I told you, I was like, there's, you know, some cool rules for this. Like, there's a bunch of unique stuff. Like, we should mm-hmm. just check this out. And I think we just poured through a download of the book and just...
I was blown away at how deep of a codex it effectively was.
Yeah.
There, and that's ultimately why we're doing this podcast. We were so, I don't know, I had a very... Speaking for myself, I was enthralled by the codex. And I'm like, this could be something. This is something that we need to... We talk about it all the time. And we've... dug into the codex a little bit, the books a little bit, and played around with some stuff, and we thought it would be cool to share our experiences and give you guys an idea of what we've been doing and our interpretation of it, because it seems like it's pretty open.
Yeah, the meta seems
there's all kinds of stuff you can do.
Either constantly changing or different in different regions, which either means like the book is really deep or it's too new of a game. But I think we jumped on a little late. Like, I think it's about three years into the making. And so we're just now getting into, like, our meta slowing down. It's not so crazy fast with you and me just, like, coming up with new ideas. Like, I mean, how many games did we play where we didn't, like, we brought units and stuff that the other person hadn't even seen or read up on?
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, I'm bringing the quad mortars. And you were like, they do what?
Quad what now?
Yeah.
Assault bikes can be in squad trains?
Right, exactly. All of these dramatic shifts and changes. So we just kind of, put this together as we're going through and learning new stuff to maybe for other players that are new out there, or even like experienced players who maybe want a little reinforcement of things they've already thought of, or a different perspective, different way to look at it. We both play dynamically different. In 40K, what I started with way back when was when I bought those Tyranids off you. But what I really made an effort was Chaos Space Marines moving into Demons in 4th Ed, which sucked. Which was awful. And finally Tau in, that was probably near the end of 5th Ed, wasn't it? I believe I got that new Demons Codex and I picked out the last few units I needed and I was like, you know what, I'm ready to fully pick up a new force and fully start something new.
Mm-hmm.
I got into the Tau, and those are my 40K armies.
I started on Tyranids, played it for a little while, but that was when I was really just kind of getting my feet wet into the game, and then I started playing Eldar, and that's kind of been my pet army ever since. It's I like what they do.
Slippery dancing, man.
When it works, it works, and when it doesn't, you feel the pain. Learning on Eldar was it beat the fear of failure into me, because things do not turn out all right. And I play Death Guard too, which was another. I play Plague Marines, Chaos Space Marine, Nurgly version of them. And so when the Heresy thing rolled around, I already had a Legion that was probably my favorite, and I had a direct opportunity to kind of link in there and see what they had going on. And I've been plugged in ever since. It's been a fun ride. We've got some campaigns going, and we've been running through the Isfahan 3 campaign specifically. And
we're just about done with that.
We had our final legendary battle the other day, which we've got a battle report on that a little while later.
We're going to end up bringing you guys two battle reports normally, but since we have this extended intro, we're only going to do the one. And we'll have a more in-depth battle report first, and then cover a main topic, which will just be different things that we decide we want to converse on. And
it'll be pretty open-ended to start with.
Yeah.
We're kind of just going to run through choices in the books themselves, just to kind of give a bit of a focal point for where we're approaching, give our two cents on what's going on with any individual unit, and it'll be kind of different every time. We'll just play it by ear, and whatever topic we feel like discussing or whatever it seems like people want to hear about, we're more than open to taking feedback. So.
And we're more on the gaming side, but we still love the narrative side, and we still love the fluff. So we will, from time to time, do way more fluff-centric episodes and way more gaming-centered episodes. So it'll go back and forth. We just got the books, nine or so of the 31 books. So we originally had, none, and now
yeah,
we can start reading.
Your buddy Adam,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Adam did. So shout out to him. Thanks a lot, Adam.
Thanks,
for the
Adam.
Books.
You rock, man.
So now we can get into that. Which we're quite behind on. I think there's 30 some. So quite a bit.
Gotta crank into that. But the overall, we're such nerds about it. We pored over wikis and got to know the overall skeleton of the story. And now we're filling in the blank spots. So.
And then the last thing that we're gonna bring you every week will be a hypothetical. Is what we're calling it. Just like a hypothetical matchup between lists that we don't know the composition of until we sit down and start filming.
We have some rough idea of what the other person is doing. We will decide beforehand what the two sides are. On today's episode, it's going to be Abaddon and Loken flavored lists, which is also going to tie into our battle report, but we'll get to that. And so we have some basic idea of what's coming, but the list composition itself, we have no idea. And it'll kind of be an ad lib hypothetical matchup. What if these two lists slammed against each other in different contexts? What could we expect the battle to go like? So,
all right. Well, we might as well start moving into the topic. Today, our topic is the building blocks of your list making, and one of the first things that we dug into and we took completely divergent paths on and have kind of made some consensus. But your tactical troops. Most important, the groundwork.
Bread and butter.
You need them.
Yep. With the few amount of compulsory troops options that it seems like we are given in these books, tactical marines are not only your most cost-efficient source of power armor, I think also that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
the closest I've seen to Chaos Space Marines, and I think they're 12 points a model or something.
I believe they are higher, but I don't. There's nothing that compares to that much power armor.
That much power armor for that cheap of a cost. And there's some decent options in the squad itself. Even though you can't take special weapons, there's some options in the squad that can give them some real definition on the battlefield and what kind of missions you can send them out doing. They can take on a variety of situations.
They're more flexible than you think.
They're a lot more flexible than you think.
They really are.
Mm-hmm. So the battle report we got for you guys today was the Legendary Battle of Phase 4 of the Istvan 3 campaign that we've had going on about a year now. In this Legendary Battle, we ended up deciding that we should try to do the Abaddon versus Loken fight, because at one point in the story, Abaddon and Loken do end up
dueling.
It is on Istvan 3, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we kind of wanted to add a little spice to what it looks like. Didn't really have any flavor besides just the loyalists are in an awful situation.
Quick aside, it may happen in the books, but I'm only halfway through False Gods, and you are like 150 pages into
Horus Rising.
So if it happens, please don't vilify us. Like, if it doesn't happen. If it's not,
this was the precursor fight, if that is the situation.
Yeah, it was something we thought should have been portrayed, and I believe it does happen. I do believe that they do get out.
At some point.
I believe it's Istvan 3. I don't know if it's covered narratively in the story.
Caveat. So, for those who may not be aware, I'll do a quick little recap of what the Phase 4 Legendary Battle entails. It's titled The Death of Gods and Angels, and the army says it recommends somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 points, with the traitor force having 25% more points available to them than the loyalists. So if you're playing 2,000, it's 2,500, whatever. We decided on a 3,000 points for the traitors and 2,400 points for the loyalists. So Sean had a lot to work with here. Sean was the traitor player. I have been playing the loyalists.
I think later on we can go into maybe an episode that just covers the whole Istvan 3 campaign, especially once we've closed it out.
Absolutely.
A review of the whole thing and how it all works.
Got some cool stories. There's some fun stuff that happened.
And there's a lot of stuff that's really geared towards the traitors. They're like, maybe not meant to, but they are given aid to win the campaign.
I agree. The loyalist player can get it every now and then, but the Phase 2 Legendary Battle, but a lot of the times it seems like they're giving the traitors some extra beef. Given the situation, completely understandable. The battlefield, 72 inches by 48 inch board, your standard board. The loyalist deployment zone is the 24 inch block in the middle of the board. There's two 12 inch sections of no man's land on either side, and the traitor deployment zone are the two 12-inch strips on the edges of the board. So it's a pincer attack already, and don't worry, it gets a lot better. The way that it ended up being, there was a
the convoluted rule, the seismic cataclysm?
So we'll get to that. That's the deployment. Traitors automatically get the first turn. Loyalists can attempt to seize the initiative as normal. The game length is a weird form of variable game length. it goes to at least the sixth turn, and then on a roll of four up, a seventh and final turn is played. Victory points, you get one victory point for each enemy unit that's been completely destroyed. Units that are falling back and units that aren't on the board count as being destroyed. Super heavy vehicles are worth two, Primarchs are worth three. The Loyalists get a special way of getting victory points. For every Loyalist unit still surviving at the end of the battle, the Loyalist player gets two victory points. The only secondary objective is slay the Warlord.
Which I like. I don't like First Blood.
First Blood, a topic for another day.
Yeah, but attrition's in a lot of these, and I was interested that it was not, but I believe because we still endure, or maybe because of the handicap, it was interesting that it wasn't in there.
Sure. Yeah. I can see that. And then here's where it gets real fun. So the fire and death rule means that the traitor special forces get a preliminary bombardment at the start of the game, used after deployment but before the game begins. This attack comprises a D3 plus 3, strength 6 AP4 attacks with a large blast and barrage special rules. These may be placed anywhere on the table and scattered normally. Traitor forces may opt to take two Lords of Battle allied detachments rather than the usual one. Don't know if that ended up coming up, but that is the case if you guys want to do that. Reserves. This rule only applies to traitor units. So there's that. And the Seismic Cataclysm.
We can skip it because we're going to have to talk about that a little bit. So go to these other two first, and then we'll go back to Seismic Cataclysm.
We'll go back to Seismic Cataclysm. It was a pretty defining thing. The Last Gasp, all Loyalist units which are not already Fearless have Stubborn. Loyalists may opt to reroll the dice to determine if the game ends or continues. So you get a little flexibility there, despite, you know, the traitors getting the first turn and the Loyalist player having to set up first.
Yeah, that's really unique to it. But it was
really unique to it. Appropriate, I guess, but man, it blew.
Sometimes tackling this campaign again and switching sides, I think that'd be fun, because it's, like I said, definitely some interesting scenarios.
Absolutely. Got a lot to work through before that happens.
Seismic Cataclysm.
And then Lines of Retreat, all units retreat toward the nearest table edge. So this Seismic Cataclysm thing, Sean, you get it that. What exactly does Seismic Cataclysm entail?
I don't have the 6th edition rulebook in front of me, so I don't know. But
sure.
When we were playing with our buddies Tim and Mickey, and Tim does have the 6th edition rulebook, so we were able to look it up. It's on page 367. It is not in the 7th edition rulebook, so we kind of had to take the rule out of there. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we had the resource, or else we were going to do this weird search, or maybe even discount it, who knows what we would have ended up doing. But the rule's strangely convoluted. At the beginning of every turn, the controlling player gets D3, or was it D3 plus 1? I think it was just D3, yeah.
Yes,
D3. D3 Seismic Cataclysm markers. They don't detail how big these markers are. You place them and roll for scatter normally. Any terrain that they land on is instantly destroyed, as well as any models touching it have to take an initiative check.
Yes, unless they're a vehicle, in which case
they just, since they don't have an initiative value. Well, it says
if they don't have an initiative value, sure.
Then they roll on a dice, and on a two up, they're just removed.
Gone.
Yeah,
they're just done.
That's pretty.
It's gone.
Insane Oflex, to be honest. I don't know.
That was nuts.
Yeah, and when we get to list composition, you'll see why this is just so like
particularly
jarring. So, after the marker is resolved, then you replace it with a crater to represent the sinkhole left by the seismic cataclysm.
This crater terminology,
there's no hardcore terminology. Like, it's concrete very, is the term
yeah,
I meant.
Yeah, it's very vague, but we worked with what we had. And
so we decided on 1-inch seismic cataclysm markers, kind of representing like a tectonic focal point almost, or like epicenter.
That's the word
I'm looking for like an earthquake, a seismic cataclysm.
As it were.
So that's what that represents, that area, that focal, that nexus of all the cataclysm. And then after
the remaining area,
the effect resolved, we did a 5-inch blast template for our craters. And the craters are dangerous and difficult terrain. I forgot about that.
Yeah, we just avoided
them in the game.
So now that's how it's all set up.
We missed the your special building. I'm not sure where it's listed.
Oh, sure. As part of deployment, the Loyalists get a piece of terrain that you get to decide it is any of the Istvan 3 special terrain options that normally you would roll for it, but let's see, trying to find the page here. The mysterious structure type table. You get to choose off of this list one of these types to...
Yeah, one of these things. We're not going to go through all of them because there's 12 on here.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about the whole thing. Just going to... the one that we ended up choosing was the shield dome generator. Makes it so that all models within the structure gain a 4-up invulnerable save against shooting attacks. It increases to 3-up against blast and template weapons. If you're within 2 inches of the structure, if it's impassable terrain is the other caveat, if it's not like a forest or something. And so what ended up happening was I picked this... It was a relatively big piece of terrain. It took up a lot of space. No, it wasn't really. It was a very large piece of terrain. And stuck it right in the center because that's where we were.
Kind of like this installation, like this almost like a four-pronged Star Fort type installation. I'm excited to paint that up. That's going to be cool.
Be cool. Yeah. It looks like it could be a crater, like a big dome-ish type structure. And just put it right in the center of the table. And as we got started... And all things became apparent, seismic cataclysm included. It was just funny that, like, on that first turn, the bombardment comes down just right in the center of this thing, and it had a good, like, 9-inch radius.
Yeah, I had a lot of leeway.
Yeah, it was almost guaranteed to land and destroy the shield dome generator. First turn, first thing that happened, gone.
Dome generator.
Yeah. Should have made it pick a smaller piece of terrain. It was kind of funny, though.
Well, we can just backtrack a bit. Let's go into our list now that they know the setup. And,
sure.
You were the one who deployed first, so I'll let you go through with your 2,400-point list, correct?
Yep, it was 2,400 points, focused around Garvio Loken. He had to be involved. So I took Loken with 10 Justeran Terminators with Power Fists. So I'm going to Spartan Assault Tank. Gave that armored ceramite, extra armor, multi-melta. Troops had 2 tactical squads of 10 men with blades, combat blades, that is. The sergeant had a power fist and artificer armor, and both of those squads were in Land Raider Proteuses. I'm running the Rite of Battle armored spearhead, which lets you replace rhinos with Land Raiders. And so they're both in these Proteuses with armored ceramite, extra armor, multi-melta.
You know, the whole shebang.
The whole shebang. And then Typhon Siege Tank with armored ceramite, extra armor, and multi-melta. So,
woo.
Yeah, I justify it in that there's this preliminary bombardment going on. And
don't forget, I had won it from the prior tournament phase.
Mm-hmm, from the prior phase.
So I technically had 2.
He had 2 preliminary bombardments to throw at me. And there was probably going to be artillery. He had so many options with 3,000 points. I got such a reward for staying alive as long as I could. And boots on the ground did not seem... like a reasonable course of action, to stick them all in Land Raiders.
Yeah, no, that was a great idea. It was jarring for me when I brought my list together, and we actually talked about it before the game started.
Mm.
What I ended up bringing, since I was obviously the other end, was Abaddon, 8 Justeran Terminators with 7 Combi Meltas, 1 Multi Melta, and 3 Power Fists, a Forge Lord with Artificer Armor, Refractor Field, Cyber Familiar, and a Bike. Armed with Melta Bombs, Power Fist, and Graviton Gun.
Ooh, yeah, the Graviton.
I like that guy. He's zipped around, and the Cyber Familiar Refractor Field is a 4-up in bowl, you know, so I don't have to swerve or, jink to get a 4-up save. I brought 2 20-man tactical squads with Nuncio Voxes, additional combat blades. The sergeants were all equipped with Artificer Armor, Melta Bombs, Power Weapons. Both of those had apothecaries attached to them with artificer armor. I had a Contemptor Talon with 2 Contemptor Dreadnoughts, one with a Chain Fist and Graviton Gun, and the other arm was just the combat weapon with the Graviton Gun and extra armor. The other Contemptor had 2 Carries Pattern Assault Cannons with extra armor. I realize in hindsight I didn't have to run the Talon, and I could have ran that carries one as a Mortis, and I think it would have ended up being a little cheaper. And I think I had the elite slot. I just overlooked that.
Fair enough.
Artillery Tank Squadron was the other one with three Medusas. I like the Medusas. They're brutal.
Yeah, I think I brought Medusas in our first.
I think you did, and then you shelled me. Yeah. And I was not ready for that.
They caught my eye for sure. Yeah. That is a strong piece of
a big influence on that. And the next squad here, this Predator squad, with three Predator tanks, all with Executioner plasma cannons, heavy bolters, and armored ceramite.
Yeah. These guys.
That was all to that was kind of to show Mickey, because we want to get him in. He plays orcs currently, so I mean we can play with him pretty easily, but we kind of want to drag him into Iron Warrior since he said he wants to play artillery. I was kind of build a little bit of this force to show him what that was.
Yeah, those tanks are gnarly. If you've never run Executioner cannons in a three-man Predator squad, please do.
Just try it. Please. It's cool. It's fantastic. So cool.
It's amazing.
As long as you have some other dedicated anti-tank, like, go for it. They're awesome. Ugh. They're so cool.
God, they just rip and they're cheap. They're not, shreds. They're not expensive. Terribly expensive. They're not. No.
I like them. I think they're cool. They're, yeah, like you said, they rip. And they don't get hot. That's the coolest part. They don't get hot. They got the three shots. Don't even. Yeah.
Cool stuff. So those were our lists. Like I said, as the game started, I lined up those Land Raiders along the line. He set on both sides, pincer style, dreadnoughts on one side, artillery on the other.
I kept the Predator in reserve and Abaddon and the Justeran in reserve for deep strike because he lets them teleport in, so I might as well.
May as well make use of that.
You don't get to do it very often in Heresy at all.
No.
The Nuncio Vox I brought for both. The fact that I was, it did double duty for me. I knew I was deep striking in with my HQ, who I wanted to be very close to the fray, and he was unprotected, relatively. And also, it drew line of sight for those barrage weapons. It drew line of sight for the Medusas.
Lets you stick those artillery behind some piece of terrain and just...
I mean, I knew those 20-mans were going to be in the thick of it, so it wasn't like they weren't going to have line of sight to whatever I wanted to shoot at with those. And that had to help a lot, because we rolled some pretty crazy drifts. Scatters. I mean, and being able to subtract four from that really.
Yeah, you were going like 9 or 10 on a lot of those. Yeah. The ones that didn't get directly on were like 9 or 10.
We're kind of far, yeah. So it really helped out a lot. I'm a big fan of those.
So the game started.
I took the first turn after.
Yep, no C's on my part. The last.
I hope it got cremated, I feel. Just that first round of firing, it would have been brutal. Yeah. It really would have. Allowing you to recollect. But you kind of had half your guys on the Typhon and the other Spartan on one side of your shield dome generator.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had... Oh, it wasn't well, the Spartan.
It was a Proteus and a Spartan and a Proteus and the Typhon, both above and below the center shield dome generator. The Medusas ended up...
Open firing.
They were deployed within range of the Spartan, where the Spartan of course had Loken and the Terminators in there. First shot, boom.
It wasn't until the last one though.
It was not until the last
one? The last one is the one that penetrated.
Okay.
Is the one that blew it away. I mean, I think the other two did glance and penetrate, but the last one made it explode.
Got it.
All three shells connected, which I thought was cool. I had the line of sight with the guys on the other side, the CO box. And, the explosion from the inside caused a wound at Loken, because he only has that power armor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he only has the power armor.
And
Loken took a wound.
Killed two Justeran. I think it was just really unlucky on that, too. That's, I think a lot of the wounds wounded, and then two Justeran went down right away.
Down, boom. So already Loken and his squad are hurting.
Contemptor moved forward, basic troops moved forward. I kind of like knew the tacticals were either going to take a shelling from the Typhon or be completely ineffective, so I just marched them straight towards it. I had the melt up on them. I could at least threaten that, hey, I'm gonna roll this dice every turn and there's a chance that it could do a lot of damage. And that was it. The Sarge had the melt up on them, and that was all I was going for.
The Typhon the Typhon and the Proteus both go to shoot the dreadnought in front, no avail. So already this pincer's coming together. He's done some damage to me. I haven't really done much back. Meanwhile, Loken and the other Proteus march away from the artillery as far as they can get. They got a 6-inch run, so they got pretty far.
You just about escaped it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think I was only able to clip you with two of them at the end. And then you ended up dropping one of the seismic cataclysms
on one of the pieces of artillery. So when a Medusa's knocked out, I get pretty far out of range. So
yeah. They only have 36, and I ended up trapping them behind this terrain so they couldn't just take last cannon fire early on and just have them all blow up. So when the seismic cataclysm started forming those craters, like I couldn't, that first crater kind of slowed me down immediately. Mm-hmm. It was like I should just stand here and take the shots.
Mm-hmm.
Reserves the next turn. Abaddon came in, but the Predators did not come in. So Abaddon came down right next to the Nuncio Vox that was on the side where all your forces had kind of retreated on. Not the side where the Tacticals were charging the Typhon.
Yeah. Right.
So he came basically to face down Garveal.
Oh, sure.
We're looking at that. We'll get into that when the duel actually happened. I was a little more worried than... Then he has the ability to do it, is all I'll say.
Yeah, it's true.
You
if
haven't
he
looked
would
at
have,
it.
If
yeah.
he would have killed Abaddon, it may have been a little different.
That would have been a lot swingier, that's for sure. The other tactical squad come around because they had kept moving forward, and since you had pulled your troops back, I was able to charge the Land Raider you were using to block line of sight to Loken.
Yep, charge in.
I think I also fired. Yeah, in the first shooting phase, I fired with Abaddon
and all those multi melts
did nothing.
Yeah,
granted, you had the army.
I guess they were commie melts.
They were commie melts. Yeah,
but
did nothing. Nothing
no,
at all.
Nothing.
It was terrible.
Had that ceramite. The hits were a little off, and nothing.
Ceramite pulled through. It's good stuff. It really is.
Does not guard against melt bombs.
No, it doesn't.
Which your armor bane.
The resultant assault phase. Well, I guess we can go back to the other shooting or the shooting phase again. This is terrible. The Contemptor came forward on that opposite side with the Typhon and the other Proteus, and it was just lighting into the Proteus with the graviton guns. The Typhon, I believe, was out of range, so we decided to light into the Proteus with both the carries and the graviton guns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we squeezed off like one or two hull points or so, but it was enough. It was enough to make a dent in it.
It didn't drop it that turn.
Well, then the assault phase, it charged.
Oh, sure.
It charged with its chain fist, and it ripped it apart. I mean, the four attacks, and it tore into it. And then I had my tactical squad charge the Land Raider Proteus and got my penetration on it because it's armor bane, and it's not technically a melta weapon,
mm-hmm.
and then rolled a 6, so the Proteus exploded. That's 2 explosions.
Gone.
Already,
turn 2 now.
Yeah, that was crazy. I couldn't believe that. That second one blew me away. So that happened. I think it killed one or two guys, the explosion. Marines on the inside.
Mm-hmm. And so at this point, these two Land Raiders are gone. Haven't done much damage back into him. The Spartan was gone. My turn comes around. Loken's squad... only has the option, really, to charge into this tactical squad that's screening Abaddon and his Justeran Terminator squad.
After the Land Raider assault, they were able to back up, and they had formed that wall around him. So.
Right. So they had an opportunity to charge into these tactical squads and then get countercharged by Abaddon and his Terminator squad.
You smoked the tactical squads.
They were gone.
smoked the whole squad.
I hit like 13 of my 14 attacks.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah.
On power weapons, right?
On power fists.
Oh, they were
fists.
That's
yeah.
right. Because then you only need 2s to wound. I don't think you failed a single wound.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay,
well.
You
14 of the 15. But.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, I lost 14 of a 20-man squad. No feel, no pains because it was double their toughness on the power fists.
Just broke. Boom.
Gone.
Caught up to them. Sweeping advance. Bing, bang, yeah. boom. Those guys were toast.
Loken's 6 initiative, right? He's fast.
Double check
referencing.
That. Reference.
Yeah, while you do that. Yeah, smoke that squad.
6 initiative.
6 initiative? Yeah, he's fast. It was very, very fast.
So, that happened. Not really much happened during that turn.
I think that just got you the 3 points and that was it. Or 2 points and that was it. The squad
yeah.
and the apothecary. Or no, because the apothecary and detachment, you only killed one.
Oh,
apothecary.
Only
so
killed
it
one.
It just
didn't
give
even
you one
get
point.
That. Damn. Next turn, this is turn 3. This was pretty much it. By the end of this turn, I
Predators came in on the other side. So they killed in that resulting shooting phase. which we'll get into this in just a second. They killed the Marines that came out of the Land Raider that was felt by the Dreadnought.
Right.
The two Dreadnoughts started working on the Typhon. I think slowly chipping it away.
It had like three hull points.
I failed
by the time it was
two killed. Or three charges needing 7-inch range with those tacticals who kept trying to charge the Typhon. Was it two or three?
It
might have been two.
It was two turns of it,
two
and
in a row?
He needed that's, seven, and he got six both
twice.
Times, which is pretty funny.
Twice.
But
yeah, that's where you get, that's what happens. So, I mean, that was, it was starting to chip down. It was about to go into close combat with that Dreadnought. I think it was going to charge at that turn, and yeah, the Predators came in, they smoked that squad. It was like...
Done, yeah. I had even written down, Predators smoked squad before any of the dice had even been rolled.
Oh, man, because I think it was something like 17 hits, and you were just like, how many hits? And it was like 17, and you're just like, let me get these. I'm taking
this. Let me relieve these guys of their duty.
Because you didn't have apothecaries, right?
No, they were in Land Raiders.
Yeah,
they couldn't take more than 10 models.
Done-so. And then Abaddon did the disorder charge against that surviving tactical squad and Loken squad, challenged Loken.
And that was, you ran the numbers on this, right? The Loken versus Abaddon.
I don't have them all now, but yeah,
sure,
I did.
Yeah.
I did run the numbers.
It's more likely that Abaddon is going to kill Loken, but he has the chance if he gets lucky with that instant death.
It's like a 32 or so percent chance that Loken can either survive the round of combat or beat Abaddon. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Combining both of those options into one.
That, right, because well, he gets to stand back up if
so
you
have that. Yeah, you have that Paragon Blade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what matters is you can get that instant kill and I can fail my 4-up save. That's 50% chance. It's a coin flip of reasonable.
Yeah.
And that's before I get a strike. Abaddon comes with power fist.
As a power fist, yep.
And so, I mean, I was going last. Granted, I was instant killing Loken on his hit, but he was only down to one at that time.
He was
think
down
he
to
lost
one
from
at that
the
point.
Shooting.
He lost one from a round of shooting, yeah.
Yeah. So you rolled your dice and didn't you miss with like... two of the three or something like that?
I missed with three of the four. The turn before when he charged, I had missed four of the five, too. That being said, 14 guys died from the Jystaren Terminator craziness. So they mopped up for him. But
he was not doing
anything. He was hitting like 25%.
So. Yeah, and he did not do it when it mattered against Loken in the challenge. And... oh, sorry, yeah, against Abaddon in the challenge, and Abaddon crushed him. I think he hit with, like, four of his hits. And
yeah, boom. It was
saves.
Yeah. Yep, see
ya. And we called it after that. I mean, I crushed the rest of that squad.
That was pretty much it.
You had the Typhon, and that was it. And the Typhon had already taken, I believe, two or three whole points.
It was done.
I mean, it was surrounded by the
Dreadnought.
Was
not surviving three more turns.
Yeah, not likely.
No way.
Not likely.
Yeah, that would be... So, yeah, that's kind of how the game went.
Yeah.
It was... There were some arguable errors in like list construction and deployment, but ultimately that mission, he had 600 more points than I did.
It mattered.
It really mattered. And the pincer deployment, it was just a lot
that
of the preliminary bombardments.
The staging even, how you set up first, but I go first.
Right.
Unprecedented.
Like,
that,
awful.
That was
awful
weird.
Feeling.
That's weird.
Terrible.
Yeah. And you're in the middle. I felt genuinely bad because I had overlooked that rule when I read. And I was like, wait, you set up first, but I go first? It's like, ouch. Rude.
Insult to injury, but...
You were a great sport about it. I'll acknowledge that.
You know, you just get some. You just got to go with it. Isvan 3 was Isvan 3.
Right.
And
you still have
two more. I'll get you next time. There's still two more games to play. It's a Zone Mortalis coming up next.
Yeah.
And the Death Guard are my boys. So,
any takeaways from that mission real quick? Like anything you...
Play the Isvan 3 campaign if you haven't.
Yeah, it's fun.
There's... It's a good introduction into the... Considering this was our first experience with the rules at all,
but
this
that was...
was
kind of what it was. We wanted to do this campaign, go through it, learn the lists, learn everything before we started really investing in purchases and really, like, you know, honing in on what Legion's like. I mean, you play Death Guard, but I play Raven Guard, and so none of these factions are, you know, one of my final factions.
Right.
But, so we were just feeling out the stuff, and it was we didn't have anybody else to play with, so we were also playing against each other in this tournament structure.
Mm-hmm.
Campaign structure,
sure. And that's kind of what we got for you.
On to the main topic today. which is Tactical Marines.
Tacticals.
Everybody loves Tactical Marines.
You gotta.
Or you should. Or you should have hopefully found an alternative.
Which there are not many.
They're scant.
So.
Well.
Go for it.
Tacticals are... So there's no objective secured, which we haven't played a lot of 7th edition. There's no everybody scores. So tacticals are the majority of who's doing your scoring. You need to have those boots on the ground.
Old school Warhammer. Yeah, you gotta have your troops. None of this 7th edition...
Capturing with my grab tanks.
Nonsense.
Yeah.
Troops score.
Yeah.
In this, and which I think is it's a fun thing in the fact that it's set in the far past, and it's almost like this is now a past edition of Warhammer that we're playing. It's kind of fun how it lines up that way.
Yeah, but it does. I feel when it comes, because of what they're doing, you always need as many bodies as you can reasonably fit in there. The fact that, like, let's just start from the top at where they are. You're getting a 10-man squad for 150 points. That's base. That's
already
ridiculously cheap.
So cheap.
In my opinion. I guess we don't play Space Marines, so I don't know what the going rate is right now. And I guess you get special weapons and stuff like that.
I think they're like 15 points a model or something. Yeah.
So that's about on. It's so good.
But you get your sergeant with that already. And the value you get from there, it's 10 points for extra bodies in that squad. So you're getting 250 points for 20 Space Marine bodies.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It
really is.
It's really, and when you consider adding something like an apothecary or some other squad-wide bonus that you can confer onto these things, the value starts getting pretty high. And
just things to note first, though. These aren't your regular Space Marines. They shall know no fear. I know this has been beaten into the ground. I know everybody knows this, but we just want to start with it. Isn't there. You don't have it.
Not a thing.
Yeah, so your guys are not fearless. Their 8 and 9 leadership on the sergeants is going to immediately be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one thing to immediately point out. The other cool rule they have are the Legiones Astartes rule, which allows them to always regroup, correct?
They always regroup.
You can always attempt to regroup.
Yeah, you don't
need the heroic leadership or can't regroup under 25%. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I play demons, they don't run away.
Yeah.
And I play Tau, they run away when they're dead.
Yeah, that's right, though. You get to automatically regroup at the start of your turn when you can normally attempt to. And they got the standard Space Marine stat line. They got the 8 and the 9 leadership. And, you know, they got their power armor. They can take combat blades for an extra 2 points per model, which gives them effectively an extra attack. If you know you're getting into combat, those combat blades, I've noticed,
are king.
They're
awesome.
They're great.
Yeah.
For 2 points just for an extra attack, when you consider that a lot of the times, or at least the way we've been experiencing it, the other side having tacticals, having the extra attack gives your tacticals that little edge that they need to wrestle an objective away from theirs.
I've been on the other end of that where I didn't bring the combat blades and I was just sitting there with my jaw kind of open being like, what? This sucks. Like, there's nothing. I'm just being outrolled here, and that's all that's going
to
happen.
That amount of dice, you're going to kill one or two guys, and if they can't manage to kill that all of a sudden you're winning combat.
Yeah, it gets cumulative so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I look at the combat blades like this. Under almost every other army or every other unit choice, I would pay 2 points for an extra attack.
Yes.
I would do that on almost every.
Absolutely.
Almost. And there are a few exceptions. And when I'm using my Marines, an exception, like in roles similar to those exceptions, I'm not buying the combat blades on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I would say for me, it's a good 75% of the time I'm bringing those.
Yep. If you're running some kind of Tau dickery, blast them apart kind of list, then by all means, don't take your combat blades if you don't need to take combat blades. Heck, you may even be taking something other than tactical squads.
I mean, at that point, I mean, who knows what you're doing?
Who knows what you're doing at that point? But
probably not even playing 30K.
It's very list dependent as far as the combat blades go, but for many lists, I've found them to be a solid extra punch.
What about this other option? I've done it a few times, and it's only come up a few times. Have you thought about ever taking it instead of their bolters?
Hmm.
I forgot about that.
You can
option.
Do it. It's free. Mm-hmm. It's free. I've done it a few times on Raven Guard because they get so close. And I already know that they're all, like, you know, I'm not going to get the rapid fire. It's not going to be useful because I'm charging. I also have done it before with when we've been playing the Isfahan 3 campaign with World Eaters.
Okay.
Because I wanted to get those attacks off. I wanted to do that.
I like that.
And they were already
if that's charging. If that's what you're doing, then again, then there's the other discussion of do you take Assault Marines. But
I considered it in our battle report as well.
Mm.
Did just you? Thinking that they were going to be that close anyway, and I didn't know how many times I was going to be engaging in, you know, gun battles.
Sure. You know, if you're running something like drop pods or Rhino Assault or Raven Guard Infiltrate, and you know that you're going to be up in their grill pretty quickly.
Armored Spearhead even more, actually, because they're assault vehicles. So
I know, that's a good point.
I kind of like that. As a free option at that's 2 points a model. That's 40 points a squad if you're running full man squads. Well, I guess if you're doing out of... Land Raiders are not running full man squads. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's still 20 points an army, or a unit. 20 points a unit.
Yeah, that's pretty dang good.
It's definitely worth considering. Don't forget that option is there, depending on what you're playing. Like I said, that we've listed a few of the reasons you might want to do that.
Can save you some points where you might need them elsewhere. So, beyond that, they can take a Nuncio Vox for 10 points or a Legion Vexillum for 10 points. And both of these options have their perks and what they can bring to the squad. And for only 10 points, both of them are worth consideration.
Yeah, you tend to lean towards the Vexilla, and I usually am bringing Voxes, but I'm doing a lot more deep striking.
Right, you take advantage of the deep strike more often, the infiltrate, the Raven Guard style stuff, and I really like what the Vexillum brings to a huge blob of guys. They don't run away, they march right up the field, and they sit where they need to sit.
I'm not going to lie, there's actually been a few times where I watched you break and was like, yes, this is awesome, and then you re-rolled it, and I was like, why do you get to do that again?
That's stupid.
Yeah, like, 10 points, and I'm always, you know, surprised and shocked, but I don't know. I don't consider those things as often. Like I said, the Deep Strike, it's such a good tool if you can aim it, which is why I like the Nuncio Voxes. The fact that I can take these on my objective holding guys, where else do I want to be deep
striking? Where else do you want to? Yeah, right on the thick of the action.
Right on my objective. So I like
them. The Nuncio Vox is sick.
I probably have to attribute that to both my demons and my Tau. They you know, coddled me a bit when it came to Deep
the
Strike.
The Deep Strike. I use it every now and then. Story for another day.
Yeah.
Drop Pod Assault. Pretty fun stuff, but as I really like the big blobs of Marines with apothecaries and Vexillums, and
so you mentioned apothecaries.
Mm.
Let's talk about, before we go into sergeants, how we kind of differ with running our squads of tactical Marines.
Sure, because that's the neat thing about tacticals, right? They're pretty flexible. Different legions can flavor them a little differently and have different roles for them, but they're pretty much the bread and butter of every legion, and they really can take on the characteristics and adapt to whatever role they need to be in. I initially started with big 20-man blobs, ran those Vexilla, stuck an apothecary in there because I was really looking early on for value.
Yeah.
I was looking, how can I get a lot of value for something that I know that I'm going to be running probably a lot going forward, and how can I make it so that I can save a good chunk of points on some nice other nice toys? But I've been shaving and leaning a little bit more towards a 15-man now, because the 20-man, either when they break in combat and you still got a big chunk of guys and you lose all those dudes,
that's awful.
It can hurt. It feels real bad.
That's awful.
You get really you get punished for your hubris there.
Yeah.
You get trying to eke all that value in your list. But also, 20 bodies tend to kind of get choked up. Unless
they totally
you're playing,
get in the way.
Yeah,
I totally have that issue.
If you're playing...
It's like, there's my own dudes in my way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's awful. It's a terrible, terrible thing.
If you know you're playing on a huge open field with a lot of open space that where 20 guys can move around, by all means, get that value.
Go for it, yeah.
but I've been leaning a little bit more towards 15-man squads.
And then you were always packing apothecaries, aren't you?
I was bringing apothecaries from match one.
Yeah, you were.
That was cool.
I don't remember if I did. I don't think I did. I think I looked at him and was like, oh, cool, I feel no pain. And then like kind of moved on. I don't know.
Honestly, it was the progression for me from looking at the basic tactical squad and how I could buy these things for 10 points a model in power armor. I was like,
then what paid a 40 point upgrade to give them all feel
all
no pain?
Feel no pain?
Yeah. You're totally right.
Apothecaries are where I want to be.
45
here.
Points, I believe.
40 to 45, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. But initially, the sergeant thing hadn't become quite clear yet.
Well, we'll go into how I structure mine before we talk about that. I started smaller. I always was running these minimums. I was like, 150 points. I can buy out troop choices for 300 points if I want. Like, and be ready to fill with all sorts of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that doesn't always work. My guys kind of got blasted. They lost effectiveness so early on, so I would either bring a few more, but then I started also getting to that same mean that you did at about 15. I like 15. And that's about when I can start justifying an apothecary. It's hard to justify an apothecary
at
10 guys.
Squad,
so I wasn't
yeah.
taking them a lot of the time. But yeah, taking the
15. Especially
15,
if they're in rhinos.
Yeah. You can't even.
You can't even at that point, exactly.
So I like taking them with the combat weapons most of the time, but like I said, I brought up sometimes the pistols. You can get away with bolt pistols because you can still, mm-hmm. which we didn't talk about this, we need to, Fury of the Legion with bolt pistols.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, let's talk Fury because that is a huge part of what makes these tactical squads.
So the Legion tactical squad gets a special ability called Fury of the Legion. That allows them to fire their guns twice. I'm assuming they're just spending this whole time. Because when you narratively look at this game, you actually have to look at it as a string.
Continuous stream of events. Yeah.
The way I view running, for example, is when you're electing to run, they actually ran in the movement phase. And all of that was one movement. Mm-hmm. That dice that you're rolling for the extra is like any extra ground they gained at that heightened pace to begin with.
Sure.
So they start that run in the movement phase. Like, you know, you're issuing... So you have to look at stuff
like
that.
Yeah, there's no break in it, really, in this actual war zone situation.
Yeah.
They wouldn't move, stop, and pause to consider while their other guys shoot up. And
exactly.
And then they start moving again. No, they're running.
So, Fury of the Legion, while at least 5 models remain in the unit armed with bolters or bolt pistols. So it's not bolt weapons. You can't do it with your heavy bolters or any goofy stuff like
pistols,
that.
Yeah.
The squad can elect to make a Fury of the Legion attack in the shooting phase, so long as they did not move, arrive via deep strike, or disembark from a vehicle earlier in that player turn. Models making a Fury of the Legion attack may fire twice with their bolters or bolt pistols against a single target. Note that in the case of a combi weapon, only the bolter part may be fired twice.
Ouch.
Right.
Ooh. That's some fury indeed.
It does a lot of damage really fast.
Even against power armor.
Yeah,
like,
it's
that's
just so
just
many hits.
So many attacks.
And that's really what you're going for. Can't move. Can't arrive via deep strike. Can't do it when disembarking from a vehicle. I think all that stuff is fine, to be honest, or else you just get cheesy, goofy stuff. Like, I'm doing drop pod assault, and all my guys are coming out Fury of the Legion in your whole army.
Yeah.
Like, that's a third of my list.
So I think the restriction is appropriate, and the reward powerful.
It makes
them
a lot more like chess pieces. You're kind of moving and setting up and being like, if you know where the range is, if you move into this, I'm going to be able to do that. Can you mitigate the amount of damage that's going to do or force a different hand?
Do you have enough close combat killiness at that point? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I get any other form of punch there.
The following section. Owing to the massive expenditure of ammunition involved, once a squad has made a Fury of the Legion attack, it may not use Overwatch fire later in that turn or in the shooting phase of the next player turn, but may otherwise move, fight, and assault, run normally. You can place a counter next to represent this. Fury of the Legion attacks may not be used for snapshots, and models joining the unit do not benefit from this rule and have to fire normally, as does any non-bolter weapon used by the squad at the same time the Fury of the Legion attack is made. Now, I thought that you couldn't assault for some reason. apparently you can. I guess we'll have to double check in a rata before we make a final ruling. But I was under the impression you couldn't.
I just thought because they were rapid fire weapons, that was why.
Well, I mean, if you have relentless or if you're doing bolt pistols?
Then sure.
Really? That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. I didn't even
know. You know, that makes those bolt pistols cool.
We need to look into that.
That is interesting. Instead of running your bolters, you're now getting fury with bolt pistols.
You can't move. So it's almost purely reactionary. Is that like a gun line-esque strategy? Like, you can't have moved to fury, and most of the time you're assaulting, you're moving forward.
That does make it tough with pistols.
It does. But I mean, I guess like...
That's when they would rhinos. Be in rapid fire range anyway. It's rhinos just like the turn something. You get charged.
Yeah. You're, like I said, rhinos. Like, if you're in rhinos, they blow up your rhino, you drop out, then you might be close enough. Maybe that's it.
But if you disembark, you can't...
No, if they blow up the rhino.
Oh, sure.
On their turn, and I then you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we went off on a little tangent.
That's Fury
left
Fury of the Legion, huge part of what makes tacticals a cost-effective source of a potentially high output. When you compare them to something like Breachers, which have their own perks, also being a compulsory troops choice option, but are pretty expensive when compared to these.
Yeah.
And Fury of the Legion.
That level of firepower, is pretty
fantastic.
Nice.
Fantastic. It's nice to
you
have.
You don't get it off very often. You're not going to get it off as often as you think you would, but it will more often come up in, like, when you have, like, 6 or 7 Marines left, and the squad, someone has, like, rendered just, like, unimportant, you then launch up a Fury of the Legion. If you're within rapid-fire range, I mean, that's quite a bit of shots.
4 shots.
Yeah. Four each. You know, that's pretty good. That's pretty solid. Well, we might as well move on to sergeants now.
Yeah, I think we covered all the other options, and sergeants in our developing meta have been this funny evolving cycle of... It's basically been an arms race. The sergeant arms race.
Certainly, a back and forth.
So our first game, did you bring... Artifice? Had we either of us brought Artificer armor at that point?
I am trying to remember. I don't think I brought Artificer armor. I think I just brought the Power Sword. The first one, I just brought the Power Sword. It's like, Power Sword's on Sergeant, sign me up.
And I don't think I had done anything to my Sergeant.
Yeah, you were just like,
these I are just my ran tax. These Apothecaries with the big blob. The Apothecaries had Artificer armor, I believe.
Oh, really?
But I was disinclined to accept challenges with them because they were giving Feel No Pain to everything.
Yeah, if they fell.
So... But, no, you ran these power swords, and immediately you're like, challenge.
Yeah, and you're like, get on that.
I was like, oh, well.
A challenge, eh?
Slice. Yeah, you had the power sword, I didn't.
And you're like, well, that's how that happens. That was our first game. You're totally right.
Yep.
That was crazy.
Power sword on one side, nothing on the other side.
I mean, you had feel no pains, but I think I had like 2 or 3 wounds, and then what do you do? Like,
the feel no pain only goes so far.
Exactly.
What's the answer to power weapons? Artificer armor.
Yeah.
Get into a challenge. Now all of a sudden the power weapon isn't cutting your 2-up save.
Yeah, it just bounced off. I believe that I didn't bring artificer armor. I hadn't made that jump. So you brought the artificer armor and the power weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got into combat, declared the challenge.
Just kind of staled out. I was just
like, well, I didn't bring the artificer armor. You didn't shot right through me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that's obviously where I need to go at this point. So we kind of were... We played quite a few games where we both were just bringing, okay, artificer armor, power weapon.
Yeah,
and most of ours are modeled as swords. Like, we were just now getting a few axes in. So we weren't power axing most of the time. We were power swording.
We were power swording. And because that's banking on the fact that if you kill the sergeant and the challenge, then they can go on to hack through some extra guys.
You
didn't want to just take the artificer armor knowing that they were taking artificer armor too, because after you kill them, they're not going to really do much against the squad after that. So
the power weapon already. You're already pumping a few points into this guy.
Mm.
So we played a bunch of games like that, and then I brought the power fist.
Yeah, and that was a big change. I was surprised when you brought that power fist the first time, because 15 points is a lot. Well, is the power weapon only 10?
The power weapon is only 10, and I didn't bring melted bombs with it. Because remember, it was the drop pod mission, the most recent game we played before our legendary battle. And you were bringing the Emperor's Children in drop pods.
Mm-hmm.
And I smashed up on one of the drop pods with the Power Fist. And I also ended up charging and challenging the guys. And Yeah, the double the toughness thing. It's wounding more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
It mostly can cover a lot of the same vehicles Meltas are, because we don't often use super heavies, and we're not using a lot of Land Raiders very often. That battle report was a little bit of an outlier.
Yeah, it was certainly an outlier. I don't think I've ever ran four Land Raiders in a list.
I don't think so.
Heard is pretty neat.
You've heard. You got pretty close. I mean, a Spartan's basically a Land Raider.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, I ran more artillery. That was totally an outlier, because I ran more artillery in that list than I've ran in my Imperialis Militia list that I played against.
Oh,
no,
that's right.
I was running more artillery in that one. So, certainly. Mostly we're going up against light vehicles, and a Power Fist will do it. Or a Power Fist to the front of at least a Contemptor Dreadnought. You can wound it. You can even penetrate it.
That's among the best options you have.
We do run a decent amount of Dreadnoughts in our meta, so
Dreadnoughts will show up every now and then, and you gotta be ready for it, and it does the job better than a single Melta Bomb.
I mean, and then where did you go from there?
At that point I started taking the Power Fist 2 alongside the Artificer armor, and now we're spending a decent amount into these sergeants. But you know, the extra benefit of having these sergeants in Artificer armor is you just stick them at the front of your squads, and now it's almost like your whole squad has a 2-up save until you take your first one.
You were the first person to do that. Plus, fluff-wise, these sergeants are like glorified badasses. They are normally leading from the front. That's what I don't know which Primarch said it, but a specific Primarch, I believe, said that a sergeant's place is to lead from the front. Something to that effect.
And it was a time of glory and conquest, and the sergeants were in 40K. You keep them
you hide them.
They can't take Artificer armor.
You don't want them to get sniped.
Oh, the days when you could take every sergeant could have Artificer armor. Like
these men haven't even heard of, I'm sure. Most of these Marines weren't even around.
No, absolutely not. So the sergeant is an interesting component to the tactical squad. It seems like they can add another layer to what the squad is already doing, as in, since you can't take special weapons in these squads dealing with vehicles, that Power Fist really helps out.
It's really important. That or the Melta Bombs. You have to invest in one of those two.
I completely agree. You can't just have your...
What about combi weapon? How do you feel about that? They can take the combi weapon. I just rarely do it. One shot just doesn't do it for me.
Combi weapons need to be brought with other weapons of the same type to me. Because you're right, the one shot from this thing isn't going to do a whole lot, but the one extra shot on top of two others coming at the same time could potentially add just what you need to push through.
Totally agree.
Let's just
go through the rest of the sergeant's possible gear. These are all things that you can exchange your bolter for, including the combi weapon. We've already talked about that, the power fist and the power weapon. There's also the heavy chain sword. It's a +2 strength, AP 5, melee two-handed. So you're sacrificing your additional attack that if you're paying for those combat blades.
That's 3 attacks that the sergeant has?
If you're charging, he only has 2 normally. I just don't see it against anything except for Xenos or Orcs. It just doesn't do anything against Legions.
No, it doesn't, because you figure you have those 2 attacks, 3 on the charge. I mean, the ones that hit will be converted into wounds, but they're still going to get their save. You're probably not even causing any kills at all.
Yeah, you're better off, even against Xenos, even against Orcs, you're probably better off with a regular combat weapon that's going to give you the extra attack. Just a regular chainsword or something.
Yeah, not a fan.
Garbage. Well, also options are the single Lightning Claw, 15 points. How do you feel about that? It's just kind of overcosted for me.
Yeah.
It really is.
Considering that...
Your other option is a Power Fist? Unless you know you're going through a lot of other power armor, if you know that that's what you're dealing with, then maybe I can see it justified.
But that Artificer armor is just too attractive.
Yeah, if that's there, that's just going to stop you dead in your tracks.
And don't a lot of other options have sergeants that can take Artificer armor too? Isn't that pretty consistent?
It's gotta be close to 90%.
Yeah,
of power armor dudes can take the Artificer armor. I'm not even sure if it's less than 100, to be completely honest with you. The more I think about it,
you know, borrow stuff like bikes and
yeah.
the like.
Okay, if but, we're counting those.
Yeah, if we're even going there. But no, most infantry-based sergeants can have the option to take artificial armor.
So your lightning
claw
is going
to
get held up real fast.
Held up pretty quick. All it takes is a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't... Yeah, it doesn't weigh up. It doesn't weigh... What about the plasma pistol? It's also 15 points.
I feel about plasma pistols the way I've always felt. I think they're too expensive.
I can agree.
I just think the one shot potential to get hot.
With the artificer, though, your get hot is also decreased by a lot.
Absolutely. Shot still doesn't go off, though. I mean, you just spent 15 points on something that... Well, if you're shooting at pistol range...
That's the one shot that might, you might make the whole game.
Yeah, you're getting charged at that point because you're 12 inches away. Like, combat is imminent. You're getting one shot with that plasma pistol. You spent 15 points on that. You can spend that 15 points on a power fist, which in the same scenario, right there getting into combat...
What happens if it kills a guy with an apothecary? A tactical marine with an apothecary? That tactical marine costs 10 points. If he has a combat blade, additional combat blade, he's 12 points... And then what's that apothecary even out to? You know, like you basically count that 45 points as an upgrade for the squad, right?
Yeah, effectively.
So
you say if you kill the apothecary with the plasma?
No. I'm talking just a regular marine
who is being affected.
Being affected by apothecary. Is that make it worth it? Does one marine do it? It's giving you the extra attack. I mean, it's still operating as a bolt pistol.
Yeah.
I mean, the extra attack goes combat. It does.
I don't think so. You don't think it, but that's how I've always felt about plasma pistols.
And that's how you have to
anything.
Look at it for that line when you're deciding if this is what you want to bring. Like, I'm probably only going to kill one guy with that. Is that what I want to do with this 15 points?
Right. I can't. In one situation, I can spend
cool
that 15
too.
Points.
So I kind of like bringing it up sometimes. I really do. Sometimes.
I hear you.
In games where that one guy is, like, okay for me when I can accept that there's one guy. Zone Mortalis. Love him.
Sure.
They're cool.
Sure.
Especially if you can reaction fire with it. If you can reaction fire, now you're getting two guys.
Mm-hmm.
So Zone Motel is cool. Probably really cool in Tactical Strike. We haven't delved into it much. Probably really cool in Tactical
Strike. Probably
really
cool in Tactical Strike.
Especially since you take sergeants as leaders. Yeah, it's probably neat.
That is interesting.
Gunslinging and dude.
Still so expensive.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. It's a lot. I don't think, I just don't think you normally do it.
Yep, not a fan, but I might try it out in this Zone Mortalis.
Melta bombs, 5 points. You don't have to exchange a bolter for this option.
5 points is... It's hard to go wrong at 5 points, having that kind of utility.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah. It's just like nothing it doesn't really handle. It handles things like out of your league.
It handles armored ceramite.
Yeah. Yeah.
That armor bane makes it really likely that anything it touches, if you get that one hit, that vehicle might just be toast.
Indeed, it more than likely will.
So, what are you running your sergeants like nowadays? What's the full? Are you doing the full loadout?
Oh man, I really do fight back and forth because there's a lot of times. Okay, if I'm loading up a Raven Guard 1 against your Death Guard. So this is what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
My sergeant is probably sporting... I do have one model of Power Axe, so I'm probably skimming the points on that one guy. Doing Power Weapon, Melta Bomb, and Artificer Armor. And on the guys who aren't... I'm probably bringing the Power Fist still.
Yeah.
And I might not even be taking that Melta Bomb to try and keep them away from other tanks. Just avoid that altogether. What about you?
I can see that. Yeah. I've been running Power Fist and...
Obviously, by the way, Artificer on both of them, if I didn't mention that earlier.
Artificer
should just be an auto-include. If you don't
should
just
be an auto-include.
Count, Legion Unless, Tactical Squads are really 160 points. Like that's what I'm trying to tell you.
If they're in a Rhino or a Drop Pod, there may not be as many opportunities to take advantage of the fact that you have the 2-up save in front. There might just be that one round of shooting, or...
But how many pass saves is that 10 points worth?
Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
Most games, if I just paid 10 points and, like, changed one save to a pass, there's a piece of war gear,
that
unique war gear that let me make one 3-up save, a 2-up save, I might take that.
It's hard to go wrong. I
Like, if you don't expect them to make saves, then yeah. But if you have any inclination that they are going to be taking saves, then I feel like... There are times I've cheaped on the Artificer armor, and then I lose my Sergeant, and it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I've been running Artificer armor still in all those setups, but I was trying to think of some situation where that might not be.
Well, we talked about the potential revolving meta that just spirals out of control, and I guess if just Power Fists become auto-includes, and you're running in the Rhinos, you might not then. But then, like I said, 10 points is worth...
Yeah.
Just upgrading into
10 points is worth saving. And sometimes that ends up turning into a lot of save, dude. Yeah. Sometimes that 2-up, we all know what Terminators do.
Yeah.
Sometimes that 2-up just lasts you forever until the end of time.
I can't.
I think that just about does it. We ran through sergeants, discussed the tactical options. Overall, I think tactical squads are the bread and butter of this book. I'll run Breachers sometimes. I rarely mess with the assault squads. I think I'm a big fan of these tactical squads.
They're cool.
They're cheap. They're cost effective. They give you a nice solid core that can take on a variety of things. And
they hold your objectives. They can be so resilient.
Give them the right tools and they can last with the best of them. Yep.
So, how do you go with the model selection for your tactical marines? What are you kind of doing with your Death Guard? Because that's the army, like, he's building and progressing a Death Guard for
supplement the plague. I've got different paint schemes for both.
Building and starting a Raven Guard, because I start off with Thousand Sons. Those are my guys.
You Zinchian man.
Definitely a Zinchian man when it comes to chaos, too. So, I mean, I'm obviously, everyone knows I'm holding out for a Thousand Sons to be dropped, which could be 22 years from now, you know, something along those lines, you know, when book 7 comes out and it's 424 pages.
Time is irrelevant in the warp. It's totally a different meaning. So when they say it's coming out, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter at all.
Straight, you know, Trail Famidorian style. Like, all time is the same.
So he already had a traitor faction, and I decided to pick a loyalist. And the Raven Guard. The Raven Guard are really cool. I think Corvus Corax is the man. Yeah. I could talk about him forever. He's cool.
Oh, slow down, man.
He's super metal as well.
Corvus is a cool guy. Yeah.
But I really kind of liked their design. So we kind of have these opposing forces that we can continue to play against each other pretty in-depthly and, you know, dive into the campaign. I'm not sure what book... I forget what book 2 is called.
Is it Betrayal and then Massacre?
Yeah,
Three is Extermination. Yeah.
So, I'm excited for this Massacre campaign. Like, I'm going to be on the hurting side as opposed to you.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We're going to flip it. I'll be doing the traitors, and he'll be playing the loyalists.
A lot of Raven Guard getting killed. That's why I'm theming on this Isfahan 3 thing. So, we can go into how I'm theming my tacticals, and then, I guess, turn it into how you're theming yours.
Yeah, from a Raven Guard perspective, how our tacticals...
So, I want to be able to play the Force, obviously, thematically, after Isfahan games. But I figured there's a lot of different marks of armor already there. So I'm running a big, like, amalgamation of marks of armor. I got a few Mark 3s. I've gotten a lot of Mark 6s that I've kind of had to mod here and there. I've been attaching a lot of the Corvus helmets. And I'm converting some of those Chaos Space Marines, which I believe are either in Mark 4 or Mark 5. They might be in regular Heresy armor.
I think Mark 4 is what
they're in. I think they're in Heresy armor, which I think is 5.
Okay.
But they might be in 4. I'm not quite sure. But I'm converting a few of those, and that kind of is supposed to represent the mashup that happens after Isfahan 5. So since the Raven Guard gets so decimated and destroyed, he's kind of like pulling dudes from all over the place to kind of form these companies.
Sure.
And my personal praetor after the fact is Sarbis Noxus, who is one of the few survivors, and he's a Terran, so he was never really in favor with Corvus Corax to begin with. But he ends up surviving, and he kind of takes leadership of the remnants of his 8th company, and forms it out of these newer recruits and guys. So a lot of my tacticals are themed to run these different forms of armor in the squads together.
Okay, sure.
Like they've been piecemealed together because they have been. Sure. Any game that we play that's not in the Isfahan 5 campaign setting are these guys who are just taken from wherever, you know, like, he needs to get guys back out there, like, right away.
I can dig that. Nice justification. Yeah.
Indeed.
It helps. I've got some Space Marine models, some Space Marine Tacticals that I've been painting up. Old school Death Guard, just the white with the green shoulder pads, silver trim all the way around. Just kind of dirtying them up, making them look like they've seen some wear and tear. Recently got a hold of the Mortarian Primarch model, so
got a hold of,
ordered it, used my money on it.
It's cool. It's such a cool model. All the Primarchs are so cool.
Yeah, that's gonna be one of my next painting projects for sure. Is getting that all looking good exactly the way I want it. They're intimidating models to paint. You put them together, and all of a sudden this model's staring you in your face like, you better not mess up. You spent a lot of money on this, and this looks really cool. Indeed. You better not mess up. So,
luckily, he's not a tactical marine.
I've got a bunch that I'm going to be slowly working through here, and given how important they are to your list building, they should end up seeing a lot of use.
Yeah, standing out.
Yep, given them. Combat blades on all of them. That's like one of the Death Guards things, I guess. They all have, they were some of the most fervent users of, like, Mortarian wanted all of them to have combat blades. They all basically needed to be equipped for any situation that they might come across. They were always armed to the teeth. Every guy can stand his own.
That's cool. I can give you extra blades that I have too, because I definitely don't need as many as I do.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. I have a few sprues
to give you, so you can chuck the extra blade on all your guys.
And they need them. Yeah. Mortarian doesn't accept anything.
Nothing less from old Mort. Well, I mean, what are some of the other ways that you could theme your tacticals? Because I mean, everybody's going to need them. So, and different legions play them differently.
Mm-hmm.
If I were doing, like, Iron Warriors, for example, the meat grinder, all my guys would look so uniform and have no customization or any cool things in their armor or anything like that.
If you're playing Death Guard, your guys should look beat up.
Yeah.
They're in the worst possible places. They better look like they've seen some awful stuff.
And they kind of don't, like, worry too much about cleaning their armor, right? It's like kind of like whatever, like I'll get around to it. Like,
well, I'm just probably going to be in an awful hellscape tomorrow, so
yeah,
may as well just leave it as is. Some legions were much more ritualistic about that, and the Death Guard, it was
a little bit about Loken doing it as well.
Oh, yeah,
he seems to do it pretty diligently. He's even doing it in this book, so it's kind of one of his
things, yeah,
yeah. Which it seems like they all do. So it makes me, as I read those things about the Death Guard not doing it, made me kind of assume that this is something that most legions do take a lot of pride in.
I wonder how much of that is Mortarian's influence, and if the Terran-born Dusk Raiders may have done it differently.
Yeah,
maybe they were more ritualist. How big of a change it was from there.
Yeah,
but if you're running those Death Guard tacticals, they're usually, because of that, they're always in the thick of it. They're always taking on all kinds of different things. So their armor should reflect that. So something fun that we thought that we could do on this podcast is, it's going to be kind of like an ad lib, impromptu style hypothetical, where we both bring a list to the table. We discuss the premise beforehand, but we don't really know what the other person is bringing. We sit down and we just kind of hash out how we think that battle would go under normal circumstances. Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot still.
Different scenarios and stuff, actually. Yeah,
we'll run through some different scenarios, how we think it might play out. Obviously, there's a lot of chance and randomness that goes into the game development process, but we thought it could be a fun thing. So we decided to flavor it as a Loken and Abaddon list. Again, we both had to bring Loken and Abaddon, but this time we flipped it. So yeah. I'm taking an Abaddon and Sean's taking Loken.
So yeah, should I just start with
go
mine?
For it, Loken. Heroes first.
All right, we did 1,500 points, and I really tried to flavor mine like 10th company. I maybe made one tactical choice over what I had read about so far, but I brought Garviel Loken.
That's surprising.
I didn't bring any Rites of War. I thought about it. I didn't look into the Black Reaving. I thought about it, but I didn't end up bringing any. 2 20-man tactical squads.
There they are.
With the extra combat blades.
With the combat blades. The
Sons of Horus. It doubles up on their
merciless fighters.
Yeah, it doubles up on that. It really just helps. Like it's having great. That many bodies.
I like it.
Sergeants in both squads are Artificer Armor, Melt-a-Bombs, Power Weapon. Hopefully, preferably modeling with the power axes. I've got 2 power axes, so.
Oh, sure.
Two squads is about where I cap that out at. So, going for that with the extra attack with the power weapon is really nice. That's almost always another kill. After that, I took 10 tactical support marines, all with Volkite chargers.
Those are the 15-inch?
Those are the 15-inch assault 2s.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Strength 5, AP 5.
Volkite's nifty.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. It's cool. I thought that was a decent amount of shots. The fact that their assault is cool.
5 of them?
10.
10 of them.
See, that's good. That's a lot. That's good. On 3s, I'll take that. That's shreddy stuff.
Yeah.
You're probably finishing that squad off in the charge. If not, you're likely outnumbering them, so you get that extra attack.
Sure.
The sergeant, I switched his Volkite charger out for the bolter. For a close combat weapon, I believe, or a bolter, and then changed that to a power weapon, which costs 10 points. It costs 0. I mean, you'd like subtract the points.
Okay.
Yet you don't give him a weapon, and then I gave him a power weapon for 10. Artificer armor and a melted bomb. So he probably have a sword.
Oh, yeah, so pretty. They can mix it up with the best of them.
Yeah, still, you know, that very much gang, Chthonic gang structure that those guys had.
Mm-hmm.
I brought 3 apothecaries, 1 for each squad, because I can. They have artificer armor and power swords.
Yeah. Can't argue with
got
that.
Got the bulk on the squads. I might as well be beaten down, add more bodies for that merciless fighters. Compound onto that, and then I brought 3 Justeran, 2 with chain fists, 1 with a power fist, and
are they with Loken?
3 combi meltas. I honestly would probably run Loken with one of the regular tactical squads.
Okay.
To give him the feel no pain.
Good point.
That's where I would focus him. Maybe even the tactical support Volkite squad. I would run Loken there.
Yeah, we'll give them a little extra.
Probably, I'd probably have the Justeran be their own branch, their own arm. They're going to attract heavy fire anyway, like, you know, high AP fire and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The kind of stuff that you don't want to get Loken in his 3-up save near.
I feel that.
Yeah,
I feel that. What
do you bring to this hypothetical?
So you went with 10th Company. I had Abaddon, and he's first company captain. Had to bring an appropriate number of Justeran Terminators. They just had to be there. They're his boys. I brought 10 of them.
Oh, wow.
With power fists.
Oh, man.
It was a huge... Almost all the points are there. Like, I just had to run with it.
It's awesome.
It's a bad... And those are his boys. There's a lot of killiness in there. To back this up, I have one squad of 20 tacticals with combat blades with a Nuncio Vox of Exela.
Oh, because you can teleport in. Why not? Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, man.
So the sergeant then has Artificer Armor, the Power Fist, and Melt-a-Bombs.
Okay.
They're accompanied by an Apothecary with Artificer Armor and a Power Sword. been a fan of that since
sensing
the beginning.
A trend here.
Yeah, no, it's been fun.
That's not evident of our meta.
They're backed up then by a Legion Tactical, a 10-man squad with blades, a Nuncio Vox, and a Vexilla in a Rhino. The sergeant has armor, fist, and bombs.
Okay.
And that is it.
Packing anything on that Rhino?
Nope, just the Rhino. Got these two Nuncio boxes. One runs ahead of the other and try to create some kind of pincer situation.
Oh, yeah, you're dropping them somewhere.
Drop them somewhere.
All right, so, I mean, straight kill points. What do we see here?
straight kill points, I've got 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 5 to bring.
I'm bringing 6.
Okay.
So a kill points game where, you know, going back and forth.
It's and that's be... one of the options in Age of Darkness?
I don't even know if it... it's the sort of like that. Yeah, it's sort of like that. We'll have to go over that more in depth on what those options are. But I was just kind of tallying up what we got there. Those just staring are going to wreck me.
What kind of AP2 are you packing?
Just the combi meltas, the 3 combi meltas, and some close combat stuff.
Those ones.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
The chain fist and power fist and the power axes I've got on my 2 tactical sergeants. But
you know, it really just comes down to how...
10, that's so many.
10,
going exactly. Man. That's ripping me up. No special guns, just combi bolters?
Yeah.
That's just so... Just the fists. That's devastating. I mean, the Volkite Chargers might get a good round off, and that could be nice.
The Volkite Charger, you say you have 5 of them?
10.
10 of them. Oh.
Shooting twice.
I keep saying that. So, shooting twice, 20, that's so. 20, which means that they're getting 14-ish.
Oh, sorry. Well, the Sergeant actually doesn't have the Charger, so there's only 9. So it's 18.
So an 18, which becomes...
12 hits.
12, which becomes 6... One?
Is it, it's not 6, it's strength 5.
They're strength 5, ooh.
So a round of shooting almost guarantees you one.
Yeah.
All but.
So, that is something.
Yeah.
But, if they're doing what they need to do and they just teleport down, they're only going to get that one turn.
Right. I mean, I'm going to need a lot to come out. You know, I would have to save my Just Aaron for firing the combi melta at yours. Like, it wouldn't be worth it shooting at the Rhino. I'm better almost even Volkite charging the Rhino. No,
If you're able to take down a few of the Justeran between combined fire and then bring in the 20 man to outnumber them at that point, now you're packing a lot
bulky,
of attacks.
They're bulky, the count is 2. So right. It's still, I'd still have to really chop down. That would be it.
It's right, like having a 20 man squad.
And they're
like
stubborn afterwards, so they're not just going to break. I don't know.
You can wear them down a little bit and then get a successful... If you can be the one to start the biting process...
You might roll me in this hypothetical, to be honest. I don't know. That's a lot of just errands. That's hard for me to get through.
How many scoring units do you have? You have a 20-man blob.
All 3 of them are scoring, including the just errand, because they have implacable advance.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have 4...
Total.
Total. Yeah,
and you've got the 3. Oh, okay, so I do have a little advantage
But if the Justeran are able to kill even one squad, now you it's back.
Do I focus on everything other than Justeran and let them kind of do their thing? Just kind of avoid them, like Eldar Avatar style.
I don't know if you can afford to do that.
I just can't let them get a charge on me.
Yeah.
Because those combi bulgers aren't going to be doing enough. They can't fury.
If you're able to leverage your more amount of scoring units to hold the
I need to kill one
area.
Of those other squads.
You probably need to kill one of the other squads.
I don't have a lot of kill. I have a hard time seeing you not rolling me with those. I just don't know how I take care of them. I don't know how I'd get them off the field. And the fact that you're dropping them in, it's hard for me to get those guys out of there.
Here would be hoping for a little bit of comeuppance. On that devastation that he wreaked on Loken.
Perhaps I'd, wound a few and then have to charge with my Just Aaron. That might be the only way.
If you can get the charges off...
I mean, they're inflicting enough power fist
wounds. They have power fists, yeah.
That's enough power fist wounds. And I'd have to kill a few early on. 10. And Abaddon. That's a lot. No, I think you got this hypothetical... But that's what First Company is, and that's why that's awesome, is it's a lot of Just Aarons.
Yeah, that's what
They even made the joke that Abaddon didn't walk around not in his Just Aaron armor because he couldn't fit regular power armor.
Yeah, he just had to wear it. He was such a monster of a man.
Well, thanks a lot, guys, for listening to the very first Seize the Initiative podcast. You guys can always find us at Seize Initiative on Twitter.
Find us at gmail.com at seizetheinitiative@gmail.com.
We also have a Seize the Initiative podcast group on Facebook. We're hoping to get some photos up of our armies. Yep, and
just kind of show you guys what we've been working on, what our progress is going on. And you guys are more than welcome to post whatever you want up on the site, too. Show us what you're working with.
You show us yours, and we'll show you ours.
Shot.
Miniatures, models.
Miniatures, right. The models, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Next episode, for our hypothetical, we're going to be playing a 2,000-point game. The flavoring of it is going to be my Death Guard army versus Sean's Raven Guard army, so you can expect some chem weapons and infiltrations type stuff going on.
Definitely infiltration. We'll have two new battle reports for you this time and a brand new topic, so it should be pretty exciting. Hopefully you guys stay tuned. Thanks again, and we'll see you in a few weeks.